Several months ago, we received word that our church telephones were being declared obsolete. And we had till the end of the year, December 31st, to come up with a new telephone system for the church. And Byron Fraser, bless his heart, he spent an enormous amount of time researching various options for us. And in the final analysis, his recommendation was approved by the Board of Elders that we would go with what is called a VoIP system. And VoIP simply stands for Voice Over Internet Protocol. And as the name suggests, a VoIP system requires or relies on the internet for it to work. Right around the time that Byron was doing all that research for us, SaskTel was stringing fiber optic cable just south of our building here, getting ready for their Infinet service to this part of the city. And since we just decided to go with a VoIP system that relies on the internet, it seemed to make sense to sign up for the Infinet package. It gives you a broader bandwidth and the fastest internet speeds available anywhere, actually. And so for about the last month or so, we have been enjoying upload speeds of 25 megabits per second and blazing fast download speeds of up to 175 megabits per second. Blazing fast, according to those in the industry. And it has been very good and very reliable. Now, I remember dial-up internet. Anyone else? Dial-up internet was painfully slow and not always all that reliable. But back in the day, that is what you had to do if you wanted to be connected to the World Wide Web, and so you did it. No big deal. But now, if I have to wait for even more than a few seconds for a web page to load on my phone, I find myself easily getting agitated. And if I'm watching something, streaming a video, and it stops because it's buffering, I find myself getting impatient. And I don't like it. And I usually catch myself, and tell myself just to grow up. Take a deep breath, and soon things will be just fine. And soon they just are. Why are we like that? Why are we like that? As the years have gone by, I am afraid that collectively our attention spans have been shrinking. And it would seem that our patience spans has also been shrinking considerably as well. We want everything right now. Not a minute from now. Not even a few seconds from now. We want things right now. And in our instant everything microwave world, we have somehow convinced ourselves that waiting for anything is simply unacceptable. Delays of any kind just will not do. I wonder what God thinks about all of that. I wonder what God thinks about our impatience. I rather suspect he is not all that impressed, particularly with the temper tantrums that we throw when things do not go our way, when we do not get what we want, especially if we do not get it when we want it. And yet, several times in the Bible, we are essentially encouraged, instructed, commanded to hurry up and wait. For example, Psalm 37, verse 7. Be still before the Lord. And what? Wait patiently for Him. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Be still and wait. Or Psalm 46, verse 10, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. And here in Habakkuk, we read in chapter 2 and verse 3, for the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end and will not prove false, though it linger. Wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. Now, if you remember from last week, we learned that Habakkuk asked God four why questions and two how long questions. And if you group those questions together, they essentially form two major complaints. The first major complaint that the prophet addressed to God can be found in Habakkuk chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. He was incredibly frustrated with the wickedness and the violence and the injustice that he was witnessing firsthand in his homeland of Judah. And he was wondering why God was not doing anything about it. He was wondering, why was God allowing sin to go unpunished? Well, God responded to Habakkuk's questions and his complaint, but not in the way that the prophet expected. God essentially said that, yes, he was planning to punish the sinners for their sin, but he was going to use the wicked Babylonians to do it. And Habakkuk could not believe his ears. The Babylonians? The wicked, cruel, barbaric Babylonians? Everyone knew that the Babylonians were far worse sinners than those who lived in Judah. Why in the world would God choose a nation of self-proclaimed sinners to judge the sins of Judah? It did not make any sense. It did not add up. It did not compute. God dropped a bombshell of atomic proportions when he replied to Habakkuk's complaint. And I wonder if there is not a lesson in there for us as well. As I said last Sunday, it certainly is appropriate for us to bring all of our questions, all of our concerns, all of our complaints to God. God is big enough, and he can handle absolutely anything we throw at him, but we better be prepared to sometimes receive an answer from the Lord that we were not expecting, that we might not be happy with. Well, having received this absolutely stunning response to his first complaint, Habakkuk's second set of questions that formed his second complaint called into question God's plans and purposes in using the barbaric Babylonians in such a way. Complaint number two, why would God use wicked people to judge his chosen people? And God's response this time was, don't worry. I know what I'm doing. I've got this covered. Everything will work out in the end. It's going to take some time, perhaps more time than you feel comfortable with. You may not see results right away, but eventually you will see my plans and my purposes being worked out in my time. Look at the Lord's answer in Habakkuk chapter 2, beginning at verse 2. Then the Lord replied, write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it. For the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end and will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. See, he, referring to Babylon, is puffed up. His desires are not upright. But the righteous will live by his faith. Indeed, wine betrays him, again speaking about Babylon. He is arrogant and never at rest. Because he is as greedy as the grave and like death is never satisfied, he gathers to himself all the nations and takes captive all the peoples. Will not all of them taunt him with ridicule and scorn? And the rest of the chapter is a series of five woes that the Lord was planning to bring upon those wicked Babylonians. Verses 6 through 8, woe for their extortion and intimidation. Verses 9 through 11, woe for their unjust gain. Verses 12 and 13, woe for their bloodshed and crime. Verses 15 through 17, woe for their drunkenness and debauchery. And verses 18 and 19, woe for their idolatry. In other words, God knew how bad the Babylonians were. And eventually, his plan was to punish them for their sin. Habakkuk did not have to worry about that. The prophet did not have to tell God how to run his universe. Anyone here been guilty of that? Trying to tell God how to run his universe. In fact, tucked away in between all of these woes in chapter 2, God assured the prophet in verse 14, for the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. What a statement! What a promise! One day, everyone, absolutely everyone, everywhere, will be made aware of the awesomeness of our great God. And then look at the end of chapter 2, verse 20. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Now, Psalm 11 expresses a very similar thought to Habakkuk 2, verse 20, and actually expands upon the thought. And in so doing, Psalm 11 nicely summarizes what God was essentially saying to Habakkuk. Psalm 11, beginning at verse 4, the Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord is on his heavenly throne. He observes the sons of men. His eyes examine them. The Lord examines the righteous, but the wicked and those who love violence, his soul hates. On the wicked, he will rain fiery coals and burning sulfur. A scorching wind will be their lot. For the Lord is righteous. He loves justice. Upright men will see his face. That is a great psalm to mark up in your Bible. The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord is on his heavenly throne. Even though when we look around, sometimes all we see is confusion and chaos, sin and sadness, desperation and despair, but the Lord is still in control. And he will work out his plans and his purposes in his good time. And that's what some of us struggle with from time to time, right? It has to be in his good time, according to his timetable, and not necessarily ours. The Bible Knowledge Commentary says this, and I quote, Habakkuk's book begins with an interrogation of God, but ends as an intercession to God. That's what chapter 3 is, an intercession. Worry is transformed into worship. Fear turns to faith. Terror becomes trust. Hang-ups are resolved with hope. Anguish melts into adoration. What begins with a question mark ends in an exclamation point. The answer to Habakkuk's why is who. His confusion, why all the conflict, is resolved with his comprehension of who is in control. And that is God. Well, what do we do in the meantime? While we are waiting for the Lord's plans and purposes to be filled, what are we to do in the meantime? Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 4. But the righteous shall live by his faith. The righteous or the just shall live by his faith. There is no question that that is a key verse in the book of Habakkuk. Indeed, it is a key verse in the entire Old Testament. And it is such an important verse that it is repeated 3 times in the New Testament. Romans chapter 1, verse 17, Galatians chapter 3, verse 11, Hebrews chapter 10, verse 38. It was the rallying call of Martin Luther as he launched what is now referred to as the Protestant Reformation. The word biblical commentary summarizes it so well. The ultimate fate of the righteous and the wicked may be slow in appearing, but the outcome is certain because of the nature of God. The righteous will live, the wicked will perish. In the meantime, the righteous is to keep on trusting God and keeping his commandments, even if there is no visible sign of God's presence or favor. The righteous or the just shall live by faith, even if there is no visible sign of God's presence or God's favor. Have you heard the expression fair weather friends? A friend, a fair weather friend, is a friend who is only a friend when circumstances are pleasant or profitable. The first sign of trouble, these capricious, disloyal friends will drop their relationship with you. In other words, a fair weather friend is a friend during the good times, but can nowhere be found during the bad times. Have you heard of fair weather Christians? The Urban Dictionary defines fair weather Christians as those who observe the Christian religion, but who only attend church services at Christmas and at Easter. And I think we could expand upon that definition just a little bit and say that fair weather Christians look like they are following God until the going gets tough or until tragedy strikes or until their prayers seem to be going unanswered. And then they turn their backs on God and try something else. Do you know what God is looking for? God is looking for all weather Christians. God is looking for men and women, boys and girls and young people who will serve Him and worship Him and obey Him no matter what, in the good times and in the bad times, in the fair weather and in the foul weather. Regardless of the situation or circumstances that they find themselves in, God is looking for Habakkuk 2, verse 4 people, those who choose to live by faith. And it is a decision, my friends. It is a choice. It is a determination of our will. Regardless of how we may feel, regardless of what we might see, regardless of what we might be experiencing, we can still choose to live by faith.